Checky. Oh, shit. Already fuck it up. All right. Let's fix that. Let's move on. Fuck. Checky, checky, check, check. Let's see. Alcohol, check. Water bottle, check. Notes that I will not stick to, check. Source material, check. Excruciatingly large dick, check. Bad attitude, check. All right, I think I got everything I need. There is actually no bad attitude today. I went to the gym this morning, had a great day at the gym. Holy shit, slayed it. Slayed it at the gym. Came home, ate some dead animal, watched some Dark Shadows. And you can scream, shout, whine, cry, sniffle, piss, moan, look for a motherfucking safe space. This is not it. Yes, you can shove your opinions right up your ass. That way Biden's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget my friends and my enemies, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility. You are wrong, and I am right. Yes, that's probably how it's going to go down. There's a really good chance. Let's just be honest for a minute. There's a really good chance. Statistically speaking, if you bet your money on this, you're going to win more often than you lose, okay? You're going to be wrong, and I'm going to be right. There it is. It's pretty fucking simple. This is not complex at all. Well, all right. It's complex if you're a woman. Because if you're a woman, everything is complex. I mean, showing up for work on time. And you're walking to your car, wage gap monster jumps out, knocks you down. I mean, what are you going to do about it? You can't help it. All right. Without any further digression, let me see if I can just jump right into this because we got a lot of ground to cover. This will be multiple episodes. You already know what's going on from the title of the podcast. So I'm going to tell you guys about shit that is going on that I have. Shit that is going on. That's not really a descriptive term. Things I have been reading, watching, so forth and so on. Recommendations of things you should indulge yourself in. And maybe some things you should stay away from. I'm not really 100% sure what's in the fucking pile here. So let me start with this. Many moons ago, when did he make this? This is in November of 2022. Thomas Crown left a comment over on the websites. And he said this. It's a great one. I have a movie recommendation for you. Thief, a 1981 movie starring James Caan. You can watch it for free this month on Pluto TV. It was directed by Michael Mann, who also directed movies like Heat, which I have not seen, The Last of the Mohicans, which I have not seen, and Miami Vice, which I have not seen. It was made back in a time period where it was still okay to be masculine. I'm curious to hear what you think about it. It is one of my favorite movies. I watched it. This is a great movie. You guys should definitely check this out. Thomas, thank you for the recommendation. That was good. Everything about this flick. The music was done by Tangerine Dream. If you don't know who Tangerine Dream is, then I pity the fool who do not know who Tangerine Dream is. They do some very good shit. It's kind of Pink Floyd-y, stuff like that. It's not pop music. Anyhow, Tangerine Dream, if you don't know who they are, check them out. It might be something you like. It might not be your style. It's fine. They did the soundtrack for the movie. Fantastic music. The movie, like, the plot, great. There's no plot holes. The characters are fantastic. The cinematography is excellent. You know, the pace, everything about it. There was no flaws in this movie. No flaws at all. And among the things that made it good is, like, if this movie was made today, basically it's about a thief. There you go. It's a movie about a thief and some stuff happens to him. And if this movie was made today, you know, there'd be car chases and explosions and there'd be gunfights where everybody's shooting on full auto and nobody runs out of ammo and people would be like jumping through windows out of skyscrapers and all this other fucking gay ass shit. Yeah, and they'd be like the thief would be breaking into things by plugging in a computer and running some software, because, you know, he basically, nowadays everybody in the movies is just a script kiddie. And they don't have any talent. They're all just script kiddies. If you don't know what a script kiddie is, you can Google it. Everything in this movie is completely believable. There's nothing that happens I could, like, that would never happen. And I'll say this too, if you watch the movie, so I'm watching the movie and it starts off really good. The whole opening sequence is great because it's him breaking into a safe and the Tangerine Dream music is behind it, you know, and there's no dialogue. I watched it on DVD. I didn't do this Pluto TV thing. I got the DVD, and the DVD had on it an interview with one of the members of Tangerine Dream. And he talked about doing the music for the movie and how the director, you know, how they collaborated and the rein that the director gave them to kind of do what they wanted and all this other stuff. And so, if you get the DVD and that documentary behind the scenes is on there, it's worth watching if you want to delve deeper into the music. But opening sequence of the movie is fantastic. And then as it goes, there's this part where I'm watching it and I felt like, oh man, it's kind of dragging down a little bit. We're getting into the emotions, you know, and he's doing the romance thing with the chick and everything. And yeah, just, and I feel like, and I kind of, I thought a little bit about bailing out because I felt like the action was lagging and it was getting touchy-feely-ish. But I stuck it out. And I'm saying this to you because if you decide to watch this movie, right, and you hit this point and you start thinking, oh, this is getting kind of soap opera, stick with it, because here's the thing. When the movie's over, I look at it and I go, okay, now I understand why that was there. Because you could have taken that out to make it a little bit more of an action movie, but the thing is, that needs to be in there because it makes the end of the movie, which I'm not going to tell you what happens at the end, it gives the end of the movie the impact it needs to make you sit there and go, holy shit. So anyhow, great movie. I can highly recommend that you watch this. So thank you, Thomas. I appreciate that. Let me mark on my list that we did this. All right, I need to get this off of the list because I got to take this book back to the library. So let me move all this giant pile of fucking shit to get to the thing that I need. I have talked about this a little bit, but here we go. The book is called Red Star Rogue, and it is about the attempted nuclear attack by the Soviet Union on Pearl Harbor on International Women's Day, which is just fucking hilarious, in 1968, and how that failed, and the theorizing about what was going on. Because apparently, even though a lot of KGB records have been revealed, I'm sure a lot of KGB records were destroyed, because this was back before, you know, Hunter Biden had a laptop and there was Instagram and shit, so everything was just written down. I'm sure a lot of KGB files got burned or shredded. And, oh yeah, I was going to see, when was this book written? I was going to do some Googling, because you know how useful that is. Everything on Google is true. To find out if anything more has been discovered about all this. This is written in 2005. I think I've talked about this already. They still don't really know for sure exactly what happened, but they've got the pretty good theory, which is that the KGB engineered taking over this submarine and attempting to launch the missile, the nuclear missile, at Pearl Harbor, and to make it look like the missile was launched by a Chinese submarine in order to start a war between the United States and China. And the guy lays out, you know, all the evidence. I mean, yeah, looks pretty good. And then the book goes on into the recovery efforts, which as I thought about it, I'm like, man, how have I never heard of this? Which then, of course, the government doesn't want you to know that Pearl Harbor almost got nuked. It went into the recovery efforts because the government of the United States wanted to get the submarine, and they, you know, spent a bunch of money and built a big ship, and they had a private corporation helping them out because that's what fascism actually is, corporations and governments working together, blah, blah, blah. And they retrieved the submarine, though they said they didn't retrieve the submarine, and a lot of disinformation, yada, yada, yada. But as I think about it, it's like, now as I search my memory, I think I had heard of this recovery effort to bring the Soviet submarine up from the bottom of the ocean. The part about the nuclear missile, though, I did not know. So anyhow, this was a very fascinating book. And I learned a lot about Soviet submarines and Soviet submarine procedures and how everything works. At the time that this happened, in the Soviet Union, nuclear warheads were actually controlled by the KGB, not by the military. Like, the military had them, you know, the nuclear missiles were on naval submarines, but technically the warheads themselves were controlled by the KGB. They had like final say on what went where and, you know, who got nukes and what nukes they got, and they were responsible for all of it. So that was a lot of interesting shit. I can highly, highly recommend that you read this book. This book also referenced multiple times another book about submarines, about American submarine warfare, called Blind Man's Bluff, which I have. It's been sitting on my bookshelf for years now. And now that I've read this, now I'm inspired to find that. Where the fuck is that book? It should be right there. It is right there. Blind Man's Bluff, The Untold Story of American Submarine Espionage. Because the guy who wrote, one of the writers, there's two writers, one of the writers of Red Star Rogue, apparently served on the submarine that is the subject of this book, Blind Man's Bluff, which is about submarine espionage warfare. So now I got to read this. All right, so put that over there. So there we go. We did that. Red Star Rogue, get that on my list. Speaking of soap operas, The Dark Shadows. Now I'm in a quandary because Netflix is going to stop shipping DVDs. So I'm like, fuck, man. Where am I going to get my Dark Shadows fix? Because I just started watching it. I have no idea how many hundreds of episodes there are to this thing. I looked on the Amazon of the .com. You can get the entire Dark Shadows series on DVD. It's like $350. I'm like, oh, fuck. So anyhow, I'll cyber beg for $350 so I can buy Dark Shadows. I was thinking this morning, because I do that occasionally when I'm not drinking beer, which I'm about to do. I was thinking this morning as I'm watching Dark Shadows and getting my emotional roller coaster fixed like a woman. It's like, you know, this is kind of like social media before social media existed. Because if you think about it, soap operas are designed to get you emotionally invested so that you keep coming back all the time to watch the soap opera so that you see the advertising. Which is what, like, Facebook is. Did I tell you guys I canceled my Facebook account? Like, officially went in, found the thing, hit the cancel button, like, nuke this, make it go away. Well, you still have 30 days. You can save your Facebook account. Oh, God. So while I was there, and this is the first time I've logged into my personal Facebook account in, I mean, easily a year. So I said, all right, I'm about to nuke this. Let me just take a look. I have like 115 people that I'm friends with on Facebook. Well, not anymore. So I scrolled down. I said, all right, this is like the last chance. Is there anybody here? I want to click on them and go look at their page and see what's going on. And I checked up on the French teacher that I used to date. and she's spitting out kids and she looks like she's happy, which I give her credit. At least she knew that having children was what she wanted to do. You know, unlike women who are in denial, focus on their career. Of course, now she was also travel, which I can never figure out how she was going to travel and have children. That just, I don't get that. How are you going to travel with all these fucking kids when you're pregnant and stuff? But anyway, at least she knew she wanted to have children. And at least she fucking pursued having the fucking children. And she's got the fucking children. I'll give her credit where it's due. So she's doing that. If those of you, if you remember the story I told you about the insane girl from Wyoming that was homeless and kept telling the cops she lived with me and everything like that. Oh my God. I checked up on her. She's spitting out babies. I'm like, okay, of all the people who should not be reproducing, she's one of them. There was something that looked vaguely male. Am I going to say he wasn't masculine? Guys, if you have that much stomach and titties, don't post pictures on the internet of you with your shirt off. It's gross. You know, she did the best she could in the man department, considering she's insane and she hit the wall hard. But she's spitting out kids. It's hard to tell how many she had because they all look alike, two or three or something. So it's like, okay, great. I dodged that bullet in multiple ways. Not that I was going to marry her and make kids with her, but, you know, I could have. God knows what an insane chicken your house can do. I talked about that in the podcast, why you do not let insane women into your house. I'm not going to go over it again. I discussed all this. I looked at a few other people, and it's like, yeah, you know, they're still kind of losers. The one chick still works in HR. Anyway, bam, it's gone. It's fucking wonderful. So anyway, no more of that in my life. Anyhow, so the soap opera is kind of like social media. You know, emotional roller coaster, keep you coming back because you want to see what's happening next. So we got through the whole thing where Burke Devlin, the universal bad guy that nobody can stop talking about. You know, they thought, did he try to kill this guy? But then it turns out we figured out the person who tried to kill the guy was actually the guy's 9-year-old son. And now they know it. And now it's like, oh, what are we going to do about this? And the police know it. But, so it's like, yeah, and all this other shit's going on. And now the fucking another chick, now Burke Devlin, instead of trying to fuck the blonde girl, now he's going to try to fuck the brunette girl. And I mentioned that all the people in the it's not a movie, all the people in the soap opera are all white. Man, it's awesome. And the sheriff is channeling Lieutenant Columbo because he kind of puts on this facade that he's kind of a bumbling good old boy. But then as soon as everybody leaves the room, he turns into, you know, the eagle eye logic. And he figured out that the man's son, 9-year-old son, is the one who tried to kill him, not Burke Devlin. So anyhow, another thing I'll say about The Dark Shadows. Watching older TV like this, in addition to just not having any colored people in it, seeing actual acting. I've talked about this before, but we'll talk about it again because I can. I've said, and it's true, that these days, you know, in the movies and the TV series and everything, and I'm not saying they have no acting skills. I'm saying they don't need to have acting skills to the level of actors who do theater. Because when you're doing a movie or a TV series and the cameras are rolling, if you fuck up, you just stop and you go back and you do it again. And you do it till you get it right. And while you do need acting skill to do that, you only need a limited amount of acting skill to do that. Right? For a curtain to go up and you to walk on stage and for you to be on stage for 40 minutes straight through and do everything you're supposed to do in the right order and not fuck it up, that takes talent. A different level of talent. And Dark Shadows was filmed back in the day when they didn't have the time and the budget to do shit again. And so you'll be watching it and the actor will blow their line and they have to just keep going. because they can't stop and go back and do this scene again. They've already been filming for like 2 minutes and the fucking episode's got to go out tomorrow, right? And so you'll see them like covering for each other. At one point, one of the actors fucking gets up and does his cross and walks into a fucking camera that did not get out of the way fast enough. And he just keeps right on going. Not a fucking beat, man. It's like the camera ain't there. So it's fun to see what I consider actual actors, like stage actors who just, whatever, yeah, piece of scenery fucking falls over. You stay in character, you keep doing your lines, you pretend it didn't happen, or you react to it and you integrate it into what you're doing. But you sure as hell can't stop the fucking play and go back to start and begin again. So anyhow, if you have way too much free time in your life, I could recommend watching Dark Shadows because it is, I'm really getting into it. It's my new crack. What do I want to talk about next? Let me do this. Let me get this out of the way. Peter Hathaway Capstick. Capstick. He is the author of Last Horizons, which I have not read, and Death in the Long Grass, which I have not read. I saw this book, what I have, it's called Death in a Lonely Land, More Hunting, Fishing, and Shooting on Five Continents by Peter Hathaway Capstick, not Chap, Capstick. And I don't remember where I saw this book talked about, but it looked interesting. So I got it through the library. The man has a very interesting writing style. And so I start reading the book. And the first couple of stories are about shooting BB guns. And here he's got his BB gun. And here he makes a machine BB gun that shoots lots of pellets. And he's shooting dragonflies. And I'm going through these first two short, it's a series of short stories. And I get through the first two, I'm kind of like, man, this is really kind of fucking not that interesting. I mean, shooting BB guns at dragonflies. Okay, whatever. And I get to the third story. The Killer Baboons of Vlakfontein, which I'm probably mispronouncing. This is in, I think it's in Africa somewhere. I want to say South Africa, but I could be full of shit. And he says right here, this chapter is no joke. It happened, and my actions were necessary. Because he talked about how he got flack for this story. So they're down there in Africa, in their little encampment slash village. Him, his hunting party, you know, and the other evil Westerners who are coming in. And then the indigenous people. And there is a troop of baboons, right? I just looked at it. Yes, baboons. There's a troop of baboons that lived in a cluster of trees nearby because it's Africa, big open plains with clusters of trees. And the baboons one day came into the encampment and attacked a woman who was working and she had her baby with her on her back and they fucking snatched the baby and killed it. And attacked her. And I have to digress for a second because I need to deal with this because I've said this. And he talks about this in the story. He says, yeah, you know, there's these people out there who say that animals won't hurt you if you don't try to hurt them first. And that's bullshit. And I have said on this podcast, well, you know, when a man, because I think this was a quote by Robert Heinlein. I could be misattributing it, but this is a quote. When a man says an animal is dangerous, what he means is, when he tries to kill the animal, it will defend itself. And generally, that's true. Like, there are no, there's no squirrels that are malicious. You know, there's, well, actually, there's some birds that are malicious. But the point is, I have said that, but I was wrong. There are animals that, and the more intelligent they are, that's why I say birds, because ravens are one of the smartest animals out there. There are malicious ravens, there are malicious dolphins, there are malicious monkeys, there are malicious baboons. So these animals came right into the encampment and fucking attacked this woman and killed her baby. And so Peter and the guys, they get their guns and they fucking put together some fire bombs and they go out to this cluster of trees where this troop of baboons lives and they fucking wipe them out. And I'm like, holy shit. And it's this fucking truly epic battle between man and baboon as there's hundreds of screaming baboons trying to kill them as they're fucking putting bullets into them and setting them on fire. And he's got another story. He's out there hunting at night with a guy, and the guy gets bit by a snake that's poisonous as fuck. So he's got to carry the guy back to the camp, and he's trying all this shit, and he won't save his life. And then their guide comes along and says, hey, get the fuck out of the way. All you can do is smear these leaves on him and make him drink this shit. And they do it, and the guy recovers. Because imagine that. The indigenous people who have lived there for thousands and thousands of years and survived actually know something about what plants will cure you when you get bit by the snake that probably lots of people get bit by. So then Peter goes back out there again because he's trying to get the jaguar that they're hunting, because he's trying to get a jaguar. And you know, here he's sitting in the dark and he hears the shit and he thinks, oh, I think the jaguar is in the kill zone. And he turns on the light and the jaguar is running straight at him. And he's got his shotgun and he fucking, and just as the jaguar is literally flying through the air, he blows the fucking thing in the face with the shotgun and nearly averts death. Yeah, I mean, it's like stories like that. I'm reading this shit, I'm going, God damn. You know, we got Cobra Tate, who thinks he's the closest living thing to James Bond because he's driving around in an expensive sports car with professional photographers taking his picture so he can put it on Instagram and fucking, you know, seek attention like a 14-year-old girl. This motherfucker is out here in the fucking Africa firebombing baboons, okay? If there's anybody on Earth who's the closest living thing to James Bond, it's Peter Hathaway Capstick. This is a hell of a book. And if you want to fucking read the adventures of somebody who is a badass, I highly recommend that you get Death in a Lonely Land. It is fucking killer. That was that. Let me put that on my list. Lonely Land. Jump back to movies for a second. I'd seen it before, but it'd been a long time. I rewatched Starship Troopers. And yes, I know. What's her name? Denise Austin cannot act for shit, and she's not that good looking either. You know, that movie was actually way better than I remember it being. Now, it's based on the book by Heinlein, my favorite science fiction author. The book is much better. For what this movie is, I was like, oh, I watched this thing. I watched the whole thing in one sitting. Because I'm like, holy fuck, this movie is way better than I remember. Monkey, oh, that's that. I did that. So anyhow, check that out. What do I got here? This is, don't want to do that. I ordered, I don't want to do that. I want to save that one. Do I want to save that one? How am I on time? Should I do this? I could do this one. Let me do this. I also picked up, when was this written? I've had this for years. Finally got around to reading it. Copyright 2001. Doctor Who novel called Byzantium. With the first Doctor and Ian and Barbara and Vicky. So this was a nice throwback. So Doctor Who, first of all, if you know anything about Doctor Who, the modern series, that's not the real Doctor Who. That's like some gay multicultural shit that's being used to indoctrinate children into thinking that they can regenerate from boys into girls. Okay, we're not talking, this is the original Doctor Who that came out back in the day that was actually good, which was actually also filmed, you know, back in the 60s, back in the day when they didn't have time and budget to start over. If you watch the early Doctor Who episodes in black and white with William Hartnell, you'll see the same thing there. You'll see, because William Hartnell was getting very old, and you'll see him frequently, like flub his lines, and the other actors or he himself, you know, will cover and everything because they couldn't stop. They didn't have time to stop, man. It's like the episode's got to go out 2 days from now. Fucking learn your lines and fucking push through, bitch. And at one point, a whole series of books was written. This is one of them, where authors took the various doctors and companions and wrote stories. This one's called Byzantium, and it was really good. It's a historical, so there's no science fiction. There's nobody conquering the world. The doctor and the guy on the TARDIS, they just land back in Byzantium, back in the days when it's occupied by the Romans. And I wasn't there when any of this happened, so I don't know how historically accurate this actually is. But the author, who is a man, did a really good job of making it seem historically accurate. Like, I could believe it. So the odds that anybody out there is in Doctor Who is pretty slim. But just in case you are, it's called Byzantium, Doctor Who novel, published by, is it published by the BBC? I'd like to try to find more of the books in this series. I know there's a bunch of them. Yeah, published by BBC Worldwide Limited. They have a list in here. No, why would you do that? Why would you have a fucking list? Oh yeah, here it is. There's a giant fucking list. I mean, they churned out, what is this, has got to be like shit 60, 70 books in this series with the different doctors. Keith Topping is the name of the author. It's a damn good book. It was nice to read a book for a change. It was just fiction and good fiction as opposed to all the other stuff I'm reading, which is either real or informative. Put this on the list. I did this podcast already. I did this on other people's podcast. You heard the interview with Scott Howard, who wrote The Transgender Industrial Complex. I bought that book. It is 450 pages. It is very dense. It is dense. I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as the information presented. It is very information heavy. Like, this is not casual reading. This is dense. You got to process this. I do want to talk about this, but not today, because I got a whole fuck ton of pages that are bookmarked that I want to do some reading. And I mention that because when I went to, is it Antelope Press? Yes. Antelope Hill. Antelope Hill Publishing is who publishes it. So I went there and I found the book and I was buying it. And I said, well, while I'm here, let me look around and see what else they got that I might want to buy, since I'm going to order something. And they have a book, in his own words, The Essential Speeches of Adolf Hitler. So I thought, all right, let me buy Adolf Hitler's speeches. Because now that I've actually been listening to Mein Kampf and found out that the man actually is a lot smarter than you think he is, let me get that. So I ordered that book. Haven't read it yet, but I got it here in front of me. I'll let you know how that goes. With the order, I got, and if I remember, let me write it on my notes. Lit Hit bookmark. I got a Literally Hitler bookmark. They sent a bookmarker that says Literally Hitler with a picture of Adolf Hitler. I'm like, oh, this is fucking hilarious. This is great. Speeches. All right, I'll write that down. So that was pretty endearing. All right, let's see. We're going to do this, but that's going to take a whole episode. I'm going to talk about these. If you just want to get ahead of the game, I'm going to talk about this at some point. Two books that, you know, if you have impulse control and you actually want to change the way you consume food and be healthier and live longer, The End of Craving by Mark Scatzer, I don't know how to pronounce his name, S-C-H-A-T-Z-K-E-R, The End of Craving. And the other one is Why We Get Sick by Benjamin Bickman, B-I-K-M-A-N. Why We Get Sick by Benjamin Bickman. And then, of course, there's also the book I'm reading about fasting, which I'm getting pretty close to the end. Holy crap, there's a lot in there I want to talk about. I will say once again, yes, the author is a vegan, and he definitely has a vegan agenda. And I was thinking about this. I'm going to tangent a minute and talk about something I didn't intend to talk about. He has a vegan agenda. And yet, despite the vegan agenda, he does a very good job of presenting the information other than the vegan objectively. Like saying, here's evidence for this, here's no evidence for this, this is what I think, but I don't have anything to back this up. Except when it comes to vegan. Then he says things like, and it's been proven that veganism is the best way to eat, but there's, you know, there's no references on that. When he talks about, oh, fasting, you know, did this thing, you know, he gives references for all of that. But there's no, oddly enough, there's no references for any of his assertions about veganism. Plenty of references for the fasting stuff, no references for the veganism. At least I'm saying that possibly erroneously, because I am, when I'm done, I am going to go through a lot of his references and look for a lot of these studies, because I want to amass a list of supporting evidence. Not because I think I'm ever going to change anybody's mind on this, but I want to do this, and I'm going to put this in a document, because as I go through life, as the great one, that's me, the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, on the internet since 1999, podcasting for 18 and a half years, who's right, who's always right, always been right, always will be right, and never been wrong. Right? When I said eat food that has one ingredient, I was not wrong. Hold on, one sec. Let's tangent for another minute. Great one. You're tangenting way too fucking much. Hey, I'm doing this. Just chill, motherfuckers. You guys are lucky you're even getting a podcast. I think a podcast went out yesterday. I'm not even sure. I have been so busy working that I have completely lost track of when I had a podcast scheduled and not. Like, I don't even know what the fuck is going on. So in the book, Why We Get Sick, in the end, he has a list of foods that you could eat. The insulin, so this is all about insulin. This book is all about the insulin and what it does. And basically, this book is about why are so many fucking people type 2 diabetic? And hey, guys, it's because you're eating shitty food. Here's a fucking spoiler, right? You know those indigenous people that know which leaves you have to smear on the snake bite and which leaves you make a tea out of and then drink it and then you vomit and then the poison from the snake goes out of your system and you live? You know, those indigenous people, have you noticed how none of them are fat? Have you noticed how none of them are diabetic? Amazing. You know why? Because they're not eating shitty ass fucking food. They don't have Pop-Tarts for breakfast. They don't have Dunkin' Donuts. They don't have high fructose corn syrup. They eat food that has one ingredient. Antelope. Whatever kind of vegetables they have over there, I don't know. Maybe they are eating, but the bread, the whole bread thing. Oh my God, the whole bread thing. I got information on that, which I haven't talked about yet, because So see, I want to put together basically a document with real quick summaries and then links to all these studies. Because as the great one goes through his life, what he's going to pass off as a life, I run into every once in a while, you know, whatever, say, hey, I'm not going to eat, you know, and say, oh, somebody said, oh, are you not hungry? I said, no, I don't eat, you know, every other day, or I don't eat, whatever. Say, oh, that's not healthy. I every once in a while, I got some fucking overweight person who's probably a diabetic telling me how not shoving food in your face, and by food, I mean high fructose corn syrup, not shoving shitty stuff that isn't actually food in your face all day long is unhealthy. I'm really tired of fat people talking to me about health. Actually, I'm tired of fat people. We could end the sentence right there. So what I want to do is put together a document with all these references, so when some stupid person says some shit to me about how not eating all day long is unhealthy, I'm going to say, look, I'm not going to waste my time convincing you. Here, I'm going to send you a document. Go fuck yourself. You send me your proof. Send me a link to your research studies that say in order to be healthy, people have to shove food in their face from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to sleep. Anyhow, here is his list of foods. This is what it says. It says, insulin-friendly food. Eat these until you're satiated. You can eat as much of this as you want. How long is this list? Do I want to read you just the whole list? Here we go. Eat as much of this as you want. Avocado oil, coconut oil, extra virgin olive oil, fish oil, butter. Remember the thing that's supposed to kill people? Oh my God, you're eating butter. You're going to drop dead of a heart attack any moment. Butter, cottage cheese, cream cheese, all meat, beef, lamb, and game. All meat. There's science. This is science. He has science. This book is filled with science. Actual real science where people did research and had control groups. Right? It wasn't just, hey, let's ask an opinion to get the consensus of seven scientists who all work for Pfizer. Actual science conducted with diabetics and people who have problems with insulin. Oh, eat all the fucking meat and butter you want. It's fine. All poultry, chicken, turkey, and others. Eggs. Remember eggs? Oh my God, you're eating an egg. You're going to have a heart attack and drop dead. No, you're not. Eggs. Artichoke hearts, asparagus, avocados, bamboo shoots, bok choy, celery, which is gross, cucumber, green leafy vegetables, leeks. There you go. That's the stuff he's saying. Eat as much of that shit as you want. It was perfectly fucking healthy, will not affect your fucking insulin, will make you be healthy and live longer. Everything on that list has one fucking ingredient. Eat food with one fucking ingredient. You're welcome. Now, back to, I yelled about that. What else do I need to yell about? Let's see, I did this. Hang on, I'm bringing it back home. Did that, I need beer. By the way, beer is not a single ingredient food, so I am in violation right now, but you got to die from something, goddammit. How am I on time? This is good. This looks like it's going to work out great. I am currently just started binging on The Dick Show, getting caught back up on that. And before that, I mentioned to you that I binged on a bunch of Art of Manliness. I cannot remember if I put this episode of Art of Manliness in other people's podcast yet or not. I was thinking about it, if it didn't already happen. I guess I could look real quick. Hang on, give me a second. Great one, you're supposed to do this before you start the fucking podcast. I know. I know, I'm a slacker. I gotta wait for my internets here. Come on, internets, grind. Let's see, come on, podcast. Where is Other People's Podcast? There it is. By the way, somebody left me a comment that I fucked up an episode of Other People's Podcast and posted the wrong episode, so I went and fixed that. Come on, here we go. Other people's podcast. Let's see. What Art of Manliness? Like You're Effortless. There's the, yeah, Open Society, Transgender, Power of Talking to Strangers. Okay, I did. So you, if you listen to other people's podcast, this was OPP number 98. And it was about talking to strangers. And so I got this book from the library because I thought this would be interesting to read. You have to give me a second here. So for those of you who don't know or don't remember, my method whenever I get a new book is it goes through a trial period where I throw it in the bathroom, and every time I go take a shit, I open the book up to a random page and I start reading. I try that a few times, and that's how I determine, okay, is this book interesting enough that I'm going to read the whole thing, or am I just going to let it slide? Now, you know what, I'm actually, so you don't have to listen to me thinking, I'm going to pause recording, which I normally never do, but I'm going to do it today. Okay, we're on page 95. He's talking about people traveling around, yada, yada, yada. According to Jones, hospitality made this possible. Humanity had begun its shift from hunting and gathering to farming, and from a nomadic lifestyle to a settled one. Once communities began to form, they could be used effectively as transient hubs for traveling strangers. In Putting Down Stakes, Jones writes, those settlers, quote, were creating a fixed human landscape that enabled a new kind of mobility for travelers over considerable distances. These new landscapes of permanence and mobility generated new kinds of social encounter, sometimes between complete strangers, unquote. Today we have cities and towns, hotels and Airbnbs and airports and bus terminals to facilitate long distance traveling. Back then, these fledgling settlements served that purpose. Based on his argument on ancient DNA analysis, Jones believes these wayfarers were mostly men. Yes, that's because even though women like to travel, back in the day when women were not subsidized by money from men stolen by the government in the form of taxes, women couldn't hit the road and travel around and ride the cock carousel. Men did the traveling because traveling was not comfortable. You had to walk. Right? There was no taxis. There was no Uber. You had to actually get off your ass and use your body to move from point A to point B. Or if you're going to ride a horse, you had to have a horse. To have a horse, you had to be able to buy a horse. To buy a horse, you had to have a job. There were no affirmative action quotas. There was nobody saying, we need to hire more women. Right? So women couldn't get a horse. Women had no talent or skills other than the obvious one to trade for a horse. And women were busy making babies because that's what women are for. So yes, most people who traveled were men. Jones believes that these wayfarers were mostly men. Jones also noticed that the sun is large and hot and far away. Water runs downhill. If you jump in the ocean, you will get wet. Yes, Jones is a very perceptive person who has picked up on things that nobody else could figure out. He probably has a PhD, probably two of them. When hunting, traditionally men's work, hunting is traditionally men's work. No, hunting is what men do because women are not good at it. It's not a tradition. It's a fact. Water traditionally runs downhill. No, water runs downhill because that's how gravity works. It's how gravity works. That's how water works. It's not tradition. When hunting, traditionally men's work, started to give way to farming, Jones believes these men simply didn't have that much to do. In today's world, an abundance of surplus men, especially younger ones, can be trouble. Quote, the behavior of young surplus males also follows a broadly predictable pattern, unquote. Write political scientist Valerie Hudson and Andrea Dernbohr, who have studied the problem. So we have two women who are political scientists studying the problem of surplus men. Quote, theories suggest that compared with other males in society, they will be prone to seek satisfaction through vice and violence, and will seek to capture resources that will allow them to compete on a more equal footing with others. Unquote. Oh, those surplus men trying to gain status through competition. Isn't that fucking terrible? What are we going to do about this problem? 10,000 years ago, perhaps because video games and white nationalism had yet to be invented, these men hit the road. This is just me opening the book to random pages. This is a book about communicating with strangers and the benefits of doing so. So here we have basically surplus men, men who don't have families. Why did these men not have families? Did they go through 12 years of public education? Were they raised by single mothers? Was the public education system controlled by women? Are the women around them fat and ugly and tattooed and eat every fucking moment of their lives from the time they wake up to the time they go to bed? See, back before video games and white nationalism. White nationalism. All right, let me warn you right now, we're going to go long because I want to finish this up and I see the end of the episode is coming. We're on page 148. Irving Goffman referred to magazines and newspapers as screens. He said they functioned to deter unwanted contact when in public. Since then, we've developed a lot more options involving literal screens to accomplish this goal, which we do. There's times I pull out my cell phone If I see a need to actively avoid engaging with other people, I will pull out my cell phone and pretend I'm doing something even though I'm not doing anything because I don't have any social media on my cell phone anymore. But yes, it's absolutely a front you put up to deter people from bothering you. We can steer most communication to email or text to remain in control of the interaction. We enter our names and do not call registry so strangers don't pester us, blah, blah, we shop on the internet, blah, 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 we go to the store, blah, blah, blah. All these strategies, blah, 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 blah. Some experts speculate the lack of interaction is a driving force behind the loneliness epidemic because the erosion of social skills makes it harder to meet new people. No shit. Wait, yes, no shit. More obvious shit. That's why we call this stating the obvious. All right, we're going to listen to the outro music, and I'm going to finish up this, and we're going to read another passage, and then we're going to be out of here. All right, I'm here. You're here. Where are we here? We're all here. Whew, caught my breath. All right, here we go. Where did I leave off? Yes. Please, please, please be assured. This is not another tirade about how technology is ruining everything special about humanity. I'm a bit of a Luddite for sure, but I also know that technology can be a lifeline. So my friends, remember, this is a book about, you know, benefits of connecting with other humans. This is supposed to be a book about the benefits of connecting with other humans. Right, he gathers practical tips from experts on how to talk to strangers, tries them out on himself. It's a book about, it's a history and a self journey and blah, blah. Okay? This is what this book is about. But I also know technology can be a lifeline for marginalized people. White nationalism, video games, marginalized people. As one study on social media used by trannies, led by some stupid bitch at the University of Texas, concluded, quote, social media has become a platform for establishing social ties, receiving education, otherwise known as indoctrination, and sharing of resources, otherwise known as child pornography, that may not otherwise be available to individuals on the margins of society, unquote. Likewise, technology can provide access to new ideas and perspectives offered by strangers in other cultures and other lands, which can be very enriching under the right circumstances. Those connections, if made in good faith and in a spirit of curiosity, not, for example, in an effort to rekindle the flame of Nazism, can be profound and inspiring. So in other words, encouraging white women to breed with niggers is profound and exciting. But allowing white people to survive, well, that's rekindling Nazism, and we can't have that. Okay, so this was the second page I opened the book to. Now, let me jump to, this is me just opening the book at random. Let me jump to the third thing that I read in this book, which, in case you haven't figured it out by now, I'm not reading this book. There's no fucking way in hell I am reading this book. Okay, page 248. And yet, psychology and culture can conspire against these sorts of connections, especially when the boundaries between us are hardened due to conflict, segregation, or entrenched prejudice. Examples of this are not difficult to come by, but let's just look at race in America for one example. Yes, let's stop again in this book about why you should talk to people you don't know, and let's worship niggers for a little while, shall we? Let's talk about how racist white people are, because I don't think we can focus enough on how racist white people are. I think we should write an entire book that's supposed to be about talking to strangers, which is really about how racist white people are. A 2017 study led by John Paul Wilson of Montclair State University, for instance, asked non-black, otherwise known as white, American participants to compare the same size young white men and young black men. Black is capitalized, white in white men is not. This guy is so fucking cuck. What is this fucker's name? Joe Keohan? K-E-O-H-A-N-E. I should look him up on the internet. He's got to be a Jew. He's got to be a Jew. Again and again, participants perceived the black, with a capital B, men as being larger, more muscular, and more threatening than white men. As a result, they believed the police would be more justified in using force against the black men than the white men. The study followed years of research, which have yielded a raft of findings. I don't know what a raft of related findings is. Non-black, otherwise known as white, study participants were more likely to misremember a black man holding a weapon. They were more likely to confuse a mundane object for a weapon in the hands of a black man. See, in other words, white people are stereotyping black people as criminals, probably because black people are criminals. Statistically speaking, yes. White people were also more sensitive to signs of anger in black faces than white faces. Yes, because white people are cucks. If a white person gets angry at you, you're pretty fucking safe, because most white people, regardless of how muscular they are pussies. Black people, black men, on the other hand, like white women, have almost no impulse control. If a black man gets angry at you, he can physically attack you because, number one, he has lower impulse control, like a white woman. And number two, he knows that because he's black, he's not going to be held accountable, because he's going to be able to play the racism card. I'm saying this because it's true. It's like when I was in Houston. And I mean, it's the same here in Rapid City. It's only the Indians, not the black people. In Houston, you're in downtown Houston, Texas, and you're driving around, and black people, black men, I've never seen a black woman do this, black men will just walk right out into the street against the light into oncoming traffic, because they know you're going to hit the fucking brakes and you're not going to hit them, because if you hit them, it's over for you, because the race card. And so, yes, they can do shit that white people will not do. That white person walks in front of my car, I'm going to smash them. Black person, no, because I'll fucking be a Nazi. So they don't have impulse control, and they know they're not going to be held accountable. Yes, black men are more prone to violence than white men, who are fucking cuckold pussies. And the white people, they're less able to tell black faces apart. Yes, because they all look the same. This helps explain, for instance, why black Americans are shot by police at a significantly higher rate than white Americans. No, they're not. Citation needed. Citation needed. Sorry, motherfucker, that's not true. That is a absolute blatant fucking lie. You can produce, there's no fucking, I was just looking, there's no references, there's no footnotes, there's nothing in this book. Like the fasting book by the vegan, he's got pages to his source material. Credit where credit's due. He's got his fucking source material listed with links, publication titles, everything. Guy right here, there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. There's no sources. Oh, here it says you can find the notes at his website, Stranger Notes. Extended. Okay, it's not here. Oh, he's a journalist. He's worked at Medium, Esquire, Entrepreneur, and Hemispheres. His writing has appeared in New York Magazine. He looks like a Jew. The Boston Globe, The New Yorker, Wired, Boston, The New Republic. Oh my God, what a fucking fag. All right, so anyway, so back to, this is why it's important to talk to people you don't know, because all white people are racist. Right? Basically, this is a book about why we should have race mixing. This is not about talking to strangers. This is about race mixing. This is about white people are racist. Okay, whatever. It comes as no surprise that this effect is heightened in people who show higher levels of prejudice. But even those who don't believe they are prejudiced are capable of dehumanizing strangers from other groups or perceiving them to be of lesser minds. kind of like the way the author of this book perceives anyone who wants white people to survive as being Nazis. You see, anyone, even people who don't think they're prejudiced, are capable of dehumanizing strangers from other groups. Except, of course, for me, because I'm a Jew. I'm immune to this, as I call white people Nazis. See, I'm immune to this because of my Jewishness, because my astronomically high IQ. Those fucking racist white people. The black American writer, something that I'm not even, Hanif Abukuki or some shit, beautifully captures what it's like to be on the receiving end of this. Quote, "What I am told most often now is that I am kind. I am told this more by white people than by anyone else." Yes, that's because the white people are cucks. They're telling you you're kind because they're trying to suck up to you, because cuckold white people in North America worship niggers. And there's nothing about you to worship. So they just make up these generic things that sound good. Oh, you look so kind. They're lying to you because they're just trying to be nice to you because they want to be nice to their enemies because they're scared of you. They're scared of being called racist. They're being scared of being called anti-Semite. They're scared of their white daughters not being impregnated by black men. And hang on, there's more. Dehumanization goes beyond race, though. Because see, now that we've sucked up to the colored people, who are we going to suck up to now? Let's take a wild guess. Who should we suck up to now? Now that we've got worshiping niggers out of the way, who do we want to worship now? Now, that's a really good guess. Trannies is the obvious answer. That's probably what I would have said, too. But no, it's actually not trannies. It's not even fags. The history of sexism is a millennia-long exercise in dehumanization. Neatly captured in the 1997 romantic comedy As Good As It Gets, when someone asked a famous romance novelist played by Jack Nicholson how he writes such good female characters. And he replies, quote, "I think of a man, then I take away reason and accountability," unquote. That's dehumanization. We also frequently see it between urban and rural people going both ways. A Jewish acquaintance of mine from the Northeast once went to college in Oklahoma and was, no joke, asked by an otherwise friendly classmate where her horns were. Okay, do Jews not understand humor? Nobody who went through 12 years of public education controlled by women could possibly think that Jews actually have horns. I mean, to say that somebody went through 12 years of public education, which was controlled by women, and never learned that Jews don't have horns, would be to say that women have failed at educating people in public schools. Well, and that would be dehumanization, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be kind of sexist to imply that teachers who are heroes who don't wear capes would fail that hard to teach their students about Jews? I mean, the Holocaust, every fucking year, these kids for 12 fucking years, Hoaxacost was shoved down their fucking throats. Pretty sure they know that Jews don't have horns. This was a joke. Meanwhile, any American Southerner who went to college in the North can tell you how surprised Northern students were to discover that, yes, they were intelligent. New immigrants, otherwise known as invaders, are constantly subjected to a similar kind of fear, condescension, and dehumanization, likened to animals or viruses, believed to be cognitively inferior and incapable of controlling brute urges, you know, like all those Somalians up in Minnesota. In his landmark history of nativism in America, you mean like Native Americans? The people that were here when Europeans came over and invaded their country and killed them? Wait for it. Just wait for it. Now, as I read this, keep that in mind, right? Native Americans were here. Europeans came over. Technically speaking, we did invade. We took it. We killed them. We put them on reservations. We banged their women, at least the hot ones. Killed their warriors. At least the Native Americans, some of them fought back. Give them credit. Okay, keep all that in mind as I read this. In his landmark history of nativism in America, the historian John Higham, probably a Jew, compiled a veritable catalog of horrible things people say about immigrants. Is this the horrible things that are said about the Europeans who immigrated here? Calling them, quote, an invasion of venomous reptiles, long-haired, wild-eyed, bad-smelling, reckless foreign wretches who never did an honest hour's work in their lives, ragtag and bob-tailed cutthroats of Beelzebub from the Rhine, the Danube, the Vista, and the Elbe, and Europe's hammer and inhuman rubbish. Unquote. That's what the Indians said about us? Who's saying that about him? So, I mean, there, and again, that's it. That's 2 pages out of the book. So that's three places where I just randomly open the book and start reading, and all it is fucking white supremacy. It's white people are racist and white people are sexist. That's what the fucking book is about. The book is not about connecting with people you don't know. So anyhow, it's great. At least now I know, and I am not going to waste my time reading this book. So anyhow, there you go. There's a quick overview of what the fuck I have been reading and watching. And we're probably going to get back to the news. I don't know. Next episode might be more news. Next episode, I want to do the transgender industrial complex. And then I got another book I want to do, which... there's some really good things about it. There's some really bad things about it. But it's sufficient that we're going to talk about it in a little bit of depth. All right, anyhow, that's it. I got to go eat more food and drink more beer and then go to work and then come home and play Star Wars and be worthless. And then, you know, go be a Nazi and everything like that, because that's what we do around here. All right, thanks for listening, fuckers. Catch you guys on the flip side.